This podcast is a member of Wild Games Productions.com and D20Radio.com.
This is Tori from the Dead Game Society. Welcome to our podcast, the DGS. We play with dead games.
Welcome again to another episode of the Dead Game Society podcast, and it's October, so what do we do in October, Michael?
Trick or treat?
I give you a rock if you come to my door.
I got a rock. Yes, I've already decorated for Halloween, so I'm all ready to do it.
Well, what I thought we would do then, because it is the Halloween season, I'd like to talk about a game, well, actually a whole company of games that one in particular has always been very Halloween-y to me, and that is, of course, Chill, originally done by Pacesetter. And with us on the show today is a good friend of ours, Tim Snyder. Some of you guys may know him online as Snyderman. Tim happens to have a lot of experience with the old Pacesetter Chill, and he's into some newer projects as well that are also pretty Halloween-y. So we're going to get into all of that, but first I just want to introduce Tim. Tim, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. Good morning, gentlemen. Can we not say Halloween so much?
I love it.
it's making me very uncomfortable.
Well, it's the old joke. Remember the old joke? Why can't witches get pregnant? Because the warlocks have Halloweenies.
Oh, right.
Listen, it's as funny today as the first time I heard it when I was seven.
Wasn't that funny at seven either, huh?
I thought it was funny.
Okay. Well, Tim, why don't we just start off? Why don't you tell us? I know you've done a lot with the original Pacesetter Chill back when you go to conventions. Tell us a little bit about what is Chill to people who haven't played it. Give us a rundown on what is the game itself.
Sure. Chill, I've been playing Chill since 1984 when the system first came out, you know, the old Pacesetter system. Pacesetter released a lot of games back in the 80s, and Chill was one of them. They also had Time Master and Star Ace. Those come easily to mind. But Chill was a special game because it was a horror game that wasn't Call of Cthulhu, which was kind of the big horror game back in the day. And with Chill, a lot of people describe Chill as being kind of Universal Studios by way of Hammer Horror kind of a setting. And that is that players are members of SAVE, which is kind of this organization that has been developed, kind of an underground organization, to fight the forces of the unknown, which is this otherworldly dimension where all of the monsters and boogeymen come from. So the reason that I liked Chill setting-wise back in the 80s was that, unlike Call of Cthulhu, where at some point you were either going to be driven insane or eaten, Chill actually put the players in the position of having a chance of actually succeeding. The movie was going to end with the heroes triumphant, although not all of them are probably going to live through it. So there was that degree of hope in that you can rail against the darkness. And that really kind of appealed to me. It was a horror game where you had heroes. So I think that's kind of why the setting appealed to me so much. Because in my games, I really don't like to place the players in a situation where it's like, okay, there's this grotesque fury that's about to consume the town, and you're not going to win. That's game over. but with Chill, you actually had that ability to actually succeed. Although it was, you know, horrific, it was more of a lighter tone. So that kind of also appealed.
I agree. You know, I always found Chill because I like to run it also. I don't think I've run it as extensively as you have, but I do have, I do like to run it at conventions now and then. I run a Kolchak adventure. I'd like to add more adventures to my repertoire, but I find that it's fun. You know, you mentioned Save the Organization. I don't myself use that organization. And I'd say to the people listening, if you're running the game, you don't have to use the organizations that they use. Now, they're adding it into the game for flavor for you to use. A lot like if you play Top Secret SI, they have Orion, I believe. But I don't really use that when I run Top Secret either. It does, the game gives you a lot of hooks if you're new to the whole game and it does give you some things to use. But I like Chill because I always saw Call of Cthulhu as, you know, it's extra worldly horrors, right? It's otherworldly. Whereas Chill is more your traditional horror stories.
Yeah.
Like the things that go bump in the night.
Exactly.
Precisely. More of your, when you think of traditional horror tropes, the game is obviously based on that. You have actual vampires that act like vampires.
Like Dark werewolf. Shadows.
Precisely. You have mummies. You have skeletons. You have werewolves. You have, and like Mike said, you have the thing that goes bump in the night, the boogeyman, the scary old neighbor lady. So, you know.
Scary old cat. Lady?
Yeah. One of the creatures from the original Chill is known as the scary old neighbor lady. And it is the old crone that lives in the house down the street that all the kids are afraid of because they know she's up to no good. And it turns out she actually is. It's, you know, a combination of witch, hag, Hansel and Gretel gonna put you in the oven, eat you. But none of the adults see it and recognize it. So that's another good point, is that most of the other horror games that were coming out at that time were very otherworldly. Unless you were into Lovecraft or you had that background, you really didn't know what a Miko was or any of these other creatures. However, everybody knows what a vampire is, and everybody knows what it will do if it gets a hold of you. So that's what made Chill kind of interesting, is because you did have that entry point that anybody could wrap their brains around.
Right, and exactly. Plus, it could take place at any time. Call of Cthulhu mostly took place, in the 20s or earlier? And this is the early days, like in 81 and whatnot. So Chill, you could really have any setting.
Precisely. With Chill, the original, you could have it take place. You could play your Victorian horror. As a matter of fact, it was really illustrated by Jim Holloway in that manner. The original Chill rulebook, if you look at the front, it's got somebody in Victorian garb, obviously. But a lot of the products that were released for Chill took place in the here and now. It all took place as if, you know, these classical monsters were basically infiltrating the modern day. So you had a mummy ransacked the modern Cairo Museum. You had a vampire who was a member of a rock and roll band who was on tour.
The Cure.
So, yeah.
I get it now. I understand completely.
It all falls into place now.
Yeah, I agree. It's very Vincent Price in many ways. I love it because, you know, that's why I run it, Kolchak the Night Stalker, because you could easily fit it into the 70s. That's when a lot of those movies actually, you know, the Hammer movies, a lot of them were in the late 60s, 70s.
Oh, yeah. The full Peter Cushing and, what's the other guy? Oh, yeah. Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee. Yeah. Those are some of my favorite Hammer stuff.
Yeah. Christopher Lee is Dracula. I think that's kind of an interesting point, is that that's the kind of horror that Chill does well. I mean, you can do the universal Bela Lugosi kind of hokey bundle of blood, or you can do the Christopher Lee fairly horrific kind of Dracula. It just depends on the kind of story you want to tell and the kind of horror you want to place your players in.
Definitely. I definitely agree. Well, tell us a little bit, Tim. Can you go over the mechanics of the system?
Sure. Seeing as how I've been running Paysetter games, you know, for the past 30 years, I kind of had the patter down as to the mechanics. The Paysetter system is based on the action table, and that's kind of the beauty of the Paysetter system, is that all of their role-playing games were fairly interchangeable and intercompatible because they all were built off the same table. So you could have time travelers fighting mummies in outer space. I mean, it was really kind of kind of neat the way it did that. The way the table works, or the way the system works, is it's all percentile based. Everybody has abilities, which are your strength, your agility, your dexterity, and that kind of thing. But you also have skills, which are abilities that you are actually an expert at. So gunfire, investigation, medicine, and those kinds of things. Like I said, everything is percentile based. And there are two primary roles when it comes to the paysetter system of resolving. You can either just do a general check, which is pass-fail. If you roll under, you succeed, and if you roll over, you fail. The other way is a specific check, and that is that you try to roll under that ability score or under that skill score. You then take the difference, which basically is a way of showing how well you've succeeded. So if you have a skill, for example, of 50, if you roll a 45, you barely succeed, but if you roll a 1, you've succeeded by a margin of 49. And so you want that kind of level of success. You then take that, it's called the attack margin. You then refer to the action table and you find out, you know, just how well you've succeeded. And it can vary from a very slight result, which might result in just a few points of damage, or if it's something that you're investigating, you might find a clue. And if you have a very wide attack margin of success, then you might do just horrific critical damage to the creature, or you might be able to easily follow that path back to its lair. So it's very intuitive when it comes to that degree of figuring out the resolution of any dice rolls. And that's literally everything, how the system works.
So would you say then that it's a percentile-based system?
It is, absolutely.
But it uses a table in many ways, much like, well, Colin, who couldn't be on the show today, he's busy today, but he's here in spirit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, apt. He's here in spirit, yeah. So I'm so happy that we decided to do this at the midnight hour, because it's like I have the candles lit in here, very atmospheric.
Yeah, Big Ben is tolling outside, and the mists are rolling past.
Over the moors, yes.
It's very Halloween-y.
Yes.
that makes me uncomfortable. I prefer we don't say that. Okay, well, what I was going to say, though, is Colin always used to say that, and I always thought he was correct, is that a lot of games out there, you can kind of divide into two different categories for mechanics as far as challenges are concerned. And that would be your table-based games like, say Chill, because it's got an action table. You know, it's basically you got a column on one side and a column on the bottom, and you just kind of match them. You know, and then if you look at Fassa's Doctor Who, it has a similar table. And if you look at, I believe, Fassa's Star Trek, right, Michael? Didn't it have a table also?
I believe so. We've played that a couple of times. And I can pull it off the shelf. Marvel Superheroes also had.
I was going to say, yeah, Marvel Superheroes, very well known for their universal table. Then you have games that are really more dice. I guess you'd say you have to do the math yourself. You don't have the slide rule of table, which would be more like D&D probably in games like that. So I think that I love games that have tables because they're so intuitive. And you don't have to sit there with a calculator crunching out equations. You just need to know what you rolled. And then you just need to find that result on the table. And it pretty much tells you what happens. And I love that about Chill. And I'm assuming most of the Paysetter games use that system?
Every single Paysetter game uses the action table, which makes the intercompatibility of all the various settings and systems. That's one of the things that kind of appeals to me. So if you want to pull a creature from a completely different game, a different Paysetter game, it unfolds without any problems into that other game. So they all use the exact same table. So if you're familiar with how to play Chill, you can sit down and play Time Master without learning the rules. You just have to learn the setting.
Hmm. Okay. Well, so we know then pretty much how challenges, I call them challenges. Mm-hmm. Anytime a character has to do something that there is, you know, he may not succeed in or he may succeed in, I call it a challenge. So anyway, going forward, you'll know what I'm referring to. We know how challenges are essentially handled. But what about the characters themselves? How difficult, how involved is it to make a character in Chill?
That's actually a good question. And if there was one stumbling block to the system, that would be my personal bugaboo about it. The way to generate your ability scores, and I don't have the rules right in front of me, but it requires.
I do, but it's a.
Do you?
Kind of. Well, they're not technically in arm's reach, but I could go grab it real quick.
Well, actually, I have it here, next to me here. Actually, I'm thumbing through an NPC.
But I agree. There now, I do know what I can say about character generation. For the most part, I thought it was fairly quick.
It is,
but it bogs down, I find, at the skills, because you do have to do some math.
Precisely. To generate your ability scores, as I recall, it's you roll 2 or 3d10, then multiply by 2, then add 40. So it's mm-hmm. kind of an oddball way of generating your ability scores. Now, the reason, and I'm just assuming that the designers created that way was so that everybody had a humanistic range, between, and I'm again guessing, like 24 and 80 or something. So nobody has superhuman abilities above 80, and yet nobody has, you know, baby-like strength of 4. So I think it was their way of kind of generating a good, mean between 1 and 100. Because obviously if the game is based on percentiles, you don't want anybody to go into it with a strength of 7. So generating those initial ability scores is a little oddball, but that's pretty much why they did it. And to build on what you said, about the skills, it's the same kind of way. All of the skills, all of the numbers for the skills are based on your ability scores. So say your firearm skill, rifle or whatever, you would be taking, most of it is an average of your ability scores. So you might take your strength and your dexterity, add them together and divide by 2 to get the base score for that skill. And every skill has a different way of generating, that base score. So yeah, it does take a little bit of time to, you know, first of all, generate all of your ability scores. And then you need to go back when after you've picked your skills out, and generate your skill scores using an average. Fortunately, the game kind of spells out exactly how you can do it, but I agree, it can get a little tedious, at the table. But fortunately, whenever I run a game at a convention, you know, I have the pre-gens available, the people I play with are usually, you know, pretty much know how the system works, so it's pretty fast.
Okay, well, Michael, I was waiting for you to come in there and deride me when he said pre-gens.
I was going to, but then I decided that I would not. But yes, that's good advice, Chad. You should listen to, you know, when you do convention games, you probably should have pre-generated characters, because there's nothing more fun than having a 4-hour game and spending an hour creating the characters.
Amen. Testify.
Yeah, I normally try to have my pre-gens made. Occasionally, and Michael gets really irritated with me about this, if it's a very simple game on making a character. Now, when I ran Chill, I had pre-gens. I didn't make them make those because I, you know, one, I wanted Carl Kolchak and company to be exactly the way I think they should be. But if it's a game like Marvel and nobody's played it before, sometimes I like to do it just so they get the experience of knowing how to do it. Because in games like Gangbusters and Marvel, superheroes, character creation really is a breeze, and it only takes probably at max 10 minutes. But yeah, I do agree. It's always best to have pre-gens, and especially I think for Chill, because there is a bit of wonkiness in creating the characters. So it is a very good idea to have your pre-gens there when you sit down at the table.
Right. Well, truth be known, it's you're usually napping through, you know, he needs a little extra rest. He's usually hungover. And so he has, you know, the players generate while he kind of nods off a little bit. You know, but
is it really napping if you're passed out?
No, I guess it's not. But, you know, the funny thing is Colin and I were, I think we must have been in Ohio for Origins, and we're getting ready to do a Star Trek game. So we're like, oh, we're all psyched for it. They made us spend an hour creating characters, and Colin and I almost walked. guys were like, you know, dude, come on. Really? Really? I said, I expect this from Chad, but come on. You look like you know what you're doing.
Yeah, the only thing worse, in my opinion, than rolling up characters at the table, which eats valuable convention gaming time, is the person who brings in, you know, Ragnarok, the ass-kicking barbarian from his home game, and wants to play, you know, in your game there. Don't be that guy.
Do not, if you're going to run an adventure, I don't care what game it is, a rule of thumb, don't let your players bring in their own characters, because now you have to get to know what that character can and can't do. And more than likely, you're going to figure it out at the wrong point in the game when you put them up against your big baddie, you plan it out, and suddenly that player is saying, oh, well, I can do this, this, and this.
Oh, yeah.
And now you're having to figure out, can he really do that?
Well, normally I run like Call of Cthulhu D20. And so one guy sat down one time and, you know, he brought his own character. I'm like, dude, you can't play Cthulhu. Okay. And he got mad at me and walked. And I'm like, oh,
you can't play that movie.
You cannot play Ragnarok the ass-kicking barbarian.
Especially in a Call of Cthulhu game. But, you know.
It might make for a good game.
It might make for an interesting spin on it. Hey, that brings me into convention-type questions now. How well do you find that the original Pacesetter games run as convention events? Some games, you know, I say that because, you know, somebody might say, well, any game can be a convention event. But I don't know. I mean, there are some games that don't really lend themselves to convention play. It's really more of a campaign format. But then there are other games that lend themselves quite well to convention formats. How would you say that the Pacesetter products, Chill in particular, lend themselves for running at conventions?
Actually, that's a good question. I think that the Pacesetter games lend themselves excellently, if that is such a word, to convention play. Once the players kind of clock the action table, you know, they can actually have that at hand, which makes resolution a lot simpler for me as the referee of the game. Because I can ask for a specific role versus, say, their investigation, and if I let them know that the skill check is on column 3, they can immediately roll through the math and tell me the result. So rather than having the referee behind the screen telling them what they've done, they kind of get a thrill out of looking at the table and going, oh, wow, I just did, like, heavy damage. Let me start rolling that. So they know what damage and successes they've had before I do. So I think that that's kind of a neat facet of the system. As far as the games are concerned, you know, like the settings, say for like Chill, in a 4-hour convention game, they run very well. Everybody is kind of introduced to the scenario. This is what's going on. You need to investigate to find out what's happening, what might be doing it, discover its weaknesses, find its lair, and destroy it. So there's a very defined beginning, middle, and end game, to say a Chill game. And so I think a lot of people pick up on that. And right. Also, I usually, when I do run Chill, and other Pacesetter games, a lot of people, especially the people who grew up in the 80s, are either aware of the system, but they never really got into it because it was a little too esoteric at time and everybody was playing D&D and Call of Cthulhu. So they want to see what they missed out on, as well as people who are just kind of interested in this old game still being played even today.
Now, Tim, you write your own adventures, right? Or do you go from modules?
Absolutely. I've always written my own adventures.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the best way to go, because then you're in control of everything. That means since you wrote it, you can make stuff up on the fly very easily. So I
stick strictly to the script, Michael. I would never make up anything off the table.
No, you can't go there. I did not write that part.
I want to go talk to the newspaper reporter, Ben, whatever his name is. And you're like, no.
No, that's just a name I wrote in the margins. He doesn't even exist. You need to go where I planned you to go.
Exactly. Well, yeah, because I remember Colin was sitting in one of your games and he thoroughly loved it. He says it was one of the best games he's ever been in. And he's been in mine, so I can't understand where he's coming from there. But
it's better than bad. It's good.
As a matter of fact, Colin played in one of my chill games at GaryCon about 2 years ago. That's funny. I completely forgot that he played in that.
Oh, yeah. He's still going on and on about it. Oh, my God. It's like,
well, I never get to play, it seems like, anymore. So I, you know, when I'm always running games, so I'd love to actually get into your game at some point then, Tim, so I could actually enjoy playing for a change.
Well, that's darn flattering of you. As a matter of fact, that's actually one thing that I have a problem with is that I've kind of become kind of the paysetter go-to guy. I would love to sit, you know, on the other side of the screen and play, but, you know, but it's that trap you find yourself in, you know, in your home games. Once you become the game master of a particular game, you never become the player again until one of your players gets up to speed, but nobody wants to do that. Everybody wants to play. So I would love to play a paysetter game sometime. So Chad,
well, you're welcome to jump into my Kolchak game anytime you want, but only if I have a seat at your table.
All right, it's a deal.
But yeah, I know what you mean, because I run Amber, the Amber Diceless Roleplay game a lot. And in fact, to the point where I never get to play it. I don't know if you've ever read the books by Zelazny, but it's a fun game. It gets a lot of heat because it's diceless, but mainly from people. It's got like its super huge cult following. But anyway, that's another episode. Tell us this then, from a convention standpoint. Well, just from a gaming standpoint, you mentioned a lot of detective work. So, and you also mentioned the fact that, you know, you have to kill the baddie. Would you say it's a more combat intensive game or more sleuthing intensive? Like Call of Cthulhu's not actually that heavily combat, I don't think. At least not when I run it. It's a lot more about finding clues and detective work. But there is combat in it. And D&D, of course, is really not about finding clues. It's about killing whatever is in front of you. Where do you think Chill fits into that spectrum?
That's okay. I've got like eight answers fighting to get out of my mouth at the same time. With that. Here is the way I play and run it. And that is that big picture wise. You know, everybody wants to hit something. So what I
usually just hit Michael.
Well, I can understand why, but in a convention,
hey, I'm here, okay?
Oh, hey, Mike.
Here's the way I usually construct an adventure. Your big bad creature, your end game creature, especially in Chill. Almost all of the monsters in Chill, your higher level monsters, the werewolves, the vampires, they can be taken down through just normal combat means. However, inevitably, they are not defeated. The vampire, you can shoot a vampire until it dissolves into mist and disappears, but in 2 months' time, it's going to reform and come back. You have to drive the stake into its heart. The werewolf has to be destroyed with silver bullets. What I try to do is when the players are investigating these kinds of things, there will be the minor level flaws that they can beat up if they want to. So you do have the zombies and you have the skeletons who jump out of the closet and freak out the players as they try to investigate, you know, what is actually controlling them. And then during the course of their investigations, they have to discover what this creature is and determine what its weaknesses are. And if its weakness is something fairly obscure, like say a sprig of wolfsbane, you know, you just don't find that at Walmart. They have to find out where they can find this one, you know, MacGuffin to bring the creature down. So I try to do it in a combination of two ways, whereas the characters are doing their investigation, trying to determine what this creature is, what its weaknesses are, where it can be found. But at the same time, I'm throwing cannon fodder at them so that they've got something to whack on as they try to reach their end goal.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, no, that sounds
good. What if I had go ahead, Mike.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that I'm in the middle of writing a Brady Bunch adventure in the setting of Call of Cthulhu, but, you know, but I might change it to Chill. I've never run Chill before.
I think
before.
You should, Michael. Hey. Chill seems right up your alley, Michael.
Yeah, because it's going to be mummies.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that you haven't grokked on the Chill, Just knowing your penchant for all things, I'm going to say pop culture, and I'm going to mean that in
kind of 70s.
Yeah,
and I really all 70s. I think of 70s Hammer movies when I think of that,
mm-hmm.
which is why I like using Kolchak, because I always thought he fit really well into that too. Maybe I'll run the one where he goes up against the Disco Knight. You remember that one, Mike?
Oh, yeah.
Actually, my favorite Kolchak was the updating on the Headless Horseman. It was a headless motorcyclist.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, that was so awesome. Yeah.
That alone is, and see, in my opinion, that's what show is all about. It's taking the classic monster tropes and moving it into the modern era.
Yeah, well, the funny thing about Kolchak, I mean, I was a kid when that came out, so my dad and I would watch it, you know, when it originally aired. So no reruns for me. So, but my favorite was the one, I think it was the pilot where they went under
the stalker,
New York.
That was the Night Stalker.
Is it? Yeah, that's when they went under New York and there was like a city underneath. I was just like,
that was actually the sequel. The Night Stalker was the Night Stalker. That was the Night Strangler. Which was a follow-up to the pilot, which is, it was the city underneath the city.
Yes.
It was the
guy
who was, he was like draining spinal fluid so that he could, extend his own lifetime.
Yes.
He would serve like every 30 some odd years or something.
Yeah, he'd go.
Oh, yeah. That was the guy. He went into his house and he had the red lined cape and all that and the cane.
Yeah, it's
that always wicked me out, and I was always fascinated with that city under the city because it was decrepit and awesome.
I don't remember the city under the city though. I remember Kolchak going into the Night Stalker's or Strangler's house, and the Strangler had like superhuman strength and everything. He could fight off a whole police squad, which I thought was really cool as far as fitting into a game. You know, another. Influence, and this is when I really think Michael should do I think he should do Michael do Kolchak better than I would, actually. But you know, Michael, have you ever thought about doing an old original like Scooby Doo using Chill?
Well, now that I'll probably start using the Chill system, I've been toying around with some Scooby Doo stuff, but it's kind of been done a little bit already. That's why I'm focusing on, like, you know, we had an idea for Welcome Back, Kata, where, you know, something happens in the school and you get to play the Sweat Hogs. But like I said, I'm working on a Brady Bunch adventure that takes place in Egypt, which sounds like Chill would cover it perfectly.
Or you could also do the Partridge Family while they're on tour.
There you go. Yeah, through,
they could drive around in the bus.
Yeah.
In Transylvania. But yeah, you can have a lot of fun with this game. Yeah, like I said, I definitely am going to – I'm actually downloading it right now. I usually like to have the hard copies. There's one on eBay that I'll probably buy. But yeah, it sounds fun. I mean, it's...
Yeah, we don't condone illegal PDF downloads on this show. Just disclaimer.
Even from RPG.net?
Okay, you're buying
I'm buying it, yes. It's downloading.
Thank you for clarifying
that. Money is exchanging hands. It's all legal.
Hey, you know... All right, this leads me into the next thing I wanted to ask you about, because we are talking about games that lend themselves to that kind of spooky atmosphere. Now, you're involved in a new game right now you're involved in a project, actually, more than just a game,
mm-hmm.
that lends itself to the same feel and probably even takes some cues from the original stuff. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that, Tim?
I'm assuming that we are discussing Crypt World. So to work my way into discussing Crypt World, I need to kind of discuss the Pace Setter and what happened with it over the years. You know, Pace Setter and Chill and Time Master and all that had its heyday back in the 80s. And then I won't go into the history because honestly I'm kind of unaware of it. But the company, you know, eventually shut down. And the Pace Setter brand and the system kind of exchanged hands. One thing that people are aware of that Mayfair Games bought the license to Chill, and they released an updated version in the 90s that was incredibly popular.
Yeah, that was that hardback that had the really wild art on it.
Right, right.
It was like a superhero.
Right. They kept
a zombie hero.
Yep. They kept all of the tropes from the original Chill. So Save was still active, and the unknown was still out there in the evil way. But they removed the table, and they made it more of a straight percentile-based game. They just kind of updated the system. Wasn't a big fan. I can't tell you a whole lot about their version of Chill. I just didn't get into it. So, and I believe Star Ace, that property passed on to another individual. But the Pacesetter brand and the system kind of floundered for many years. And I kept the torch alive. I was still playing it fairly rabidly through the years. But then,
the keeper of the flame.
That is my goal. I've always just enjoyed the Pacesetter system. Now, over the years, I kind of got into Mutant Future, which is the post-apocalyptic game that was created by Dan Proctor and Goblinoid Games, best known for Labyrinth Lord, of course. And Dan began teasing on the forums that he had discovered this game from way back when that he fell in love with, and that he was going to release as a new Goblinoid game system. And that game was Time Master. And I went crazy, goofy, crazy nuts, because it's one of my, obviously one of my favorite games, and it's the Pacesetter system. So, Dan and I got to talking about it, and I was, just told him about my enthusiasm and my background with it. And Dan so enjoyed the Time Master game as well as the system that he pursued and eventually purchased the Pacesetter brand and all of the materials that were currently attached to it. So Goblinoid Games actually is the new producer of Pacesetter games, as well as Time Master and Sandman. Star Ace is still owned by another individual. And of course, Chill, because it became a Mayfair property and it was purchased by some other folks, Chill kind of became a separate entity away from the whole Pacesetter brand. That said, Dan approached me that he wanted to create a new horror game based on the Pacesetter action table system that would be a spiritual successor to Chill.
This is Dan Proctor.
That is right. That is Dan Proctor. And because of my background with the system, and the conversations that we had leading up to that conversation, he brought me on board initially in an advisory way. But as I kind of contributed ideas, he brought me on as an actual co-author. And through that collaboration, we created Crypt World, which is the new Pacesetter horror themed RPG based on the classic action table system. It was released 1 year ago. We released it on September Friday the 13th. So we thought that was fairly appropriate. And it has been very well received by folks who both enjoyed the old Chill as well as those who are interested in the classic Pacesetter action table system.
Okay, now where could I get that if I wanted to get it? Is it just PDF or is there a hard version?
Oh yeah, you can pick up both the PDF at all the typical locations like RPG Now, DriveThruRPG, as well as on the at Goblinoid Games on his online store. You can also purchase the PDF directly from Dan, and I believe there's a slight discount if you do that.
Well, what I'll do is I'll post that information on the on our webpage for this interview.
Oh, wonderful.
So, Tim, okay, if I wanted to buy a copy of Crypt World via PDF, is there a website that I would go to? And what about, is there any kind of a promo code?
Well, it's funny that you should ask that. For the month of October, I kind of slipped my mind. Crypt World is currently available in PDF at 50% off. So you can actually purchase it for about $3 right now. It's in celebration of Crypt World's 1 year anniversary. And actually, this is the 30th year for Pacesetter. Pacesetter opened in 84. So for the month of October, Crypt World is available in PDF for 50% off. You can go to, I believe, rpgnow.com is where that is located. And I have a discount coupon that I can forward to you if you want to get it posted.
Yeah, if you could send that, and then we'll post that on this interview's website page.
And anybody who wants to check it out for basically $3, they can get the entire rule book and get to rolling.
And that is definitely better than a rock in your Halloween basket.
This is true. Chad, just pony up the cash. Jeez, come on. Come on.
Look, I'm just saying.
You would, and you were asking about hard copy. It is available in hardback and paperback at Lulu. So for those of you who are Luddites and need to be able to flip through pages, it's available there too.
Does it come in audio as well? Because I'm more into audiobooks.
Audiobook?
Yeah. Michael's illiterate, so he's rather have it read to him, like most books are.
Michael, for an additional $20 a week, I can call you up and read you the next chapter.
$20, that's worth $100.
Okay.
Can you stand next to Michael's table and whenever he says, let me look that real up, that, and he'll turn to you.
And then I'll just flip to the page and just come, okay, at this point, you're going to want to roll.
So, and I'll say, now, which die is that?
That's the one with the 12.
Oh, okay. I got it. Thanks.
Okay.
And can anybody have you stand behind them while they're running at a convention, Tim?
Yeah, I'll do anything for money. Sure. I will be happy to be the voice behind you saying, no, not that one. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, do that.
Okay.
Yeah. What are you, stupid?
Well, speaking of conventions, we have Nexus coming up next year. It'd be a perfect thing to maybe have a horror-themed convention. So, and we can roll out, you know, all these games.
Oh, that would be a lot.
Wouldn't that be fun? Yeah, because
yeah.
we need to see you again.
Oh, well,
real quick, Tim, what I'd like to know a bit more about is Crypt World's, how is it's now, I guess, kind of the same questions we were going over with Chill, but it's a different game. How different are the mechanics? What's the learning curve? Say I'm a big Chill fan and I want to check out Crypt World. What's my learning curve going to be?
Your learning curve is zero. Since Crypt World is basically put together on the exact same action table system as the classic pace setter system, there is no learning curve. So if you played Chill back in the 80s, then you can easily pick up and play Crypt World, you know, in the 14s or however we say this decade. So the learning curve is fairly zero. Now, where the differences come, obviously, with Chill has, you have save and you have the unknown and you have those intellectual properties that are not available. So what Dan and I did was make Crypt World, well, first of all, it's all based on kind of movies from the 80s. It's kind of the jumping off point. So rather than your classic, you still have your classic monster tropes, but they're seen through the veil of the 1980s. So
kind of like Fright Night.
Precisely. So for vampires, you want to think more Fright Night and Lost Boy. For your
Welcome to Fright yes. Night. Sorry,
I know. That. I watched that 2 weeks ago.
For your werewolf, you know, think more of American Werewolf in London and Howling and Wolfen.
Nice.
Plus, we brought the whole 80s slasher genres in. So you have your Cannibal Hillbilly. You can have your Dream Stalker Freddy. So we also brought in Chuds.
Gotta
have Chuds. We also have the Krites. We call them ankle biters, but we have those from Critters. Well as some of your science fictiony kind of conspiracy related horror scenarios. So, you can run They Live if you want to do that. Or you could run Deadly Spawn.
Could I run Screamers?
Absolutely, you can run Screamers. Why wouldn't you run Screamers?
Of course.
So that's kind of when people ask me the primary difference between the setting, that is a good jumping off point. That the setting that we kind of were keeping in the back of our minds as we created it were kind of the horror tropes from the 80s, but still in keeping with the classical monsters. So suppose you wanted to do the blob, which you could do, because we do have a space blob creature in Crypt World, but you'll want to look more at the blob, the remake that came out in the 80s rather than the classical 1950s blob. So it's more of a quick-moving protoplasm with tendrils. rather than the oozing monstrosity of the original. So also with Crypt World, rather than say, there are any number of new organizations that we've created, that your team could be members of. You could be a member of DAPA, which is a government organization which stands for Defense Against Paranormal Activity. So kind of your, you know, if you wanted to run an X-Files game, you could do that. You could also be investigators for the Weekly Inquisitor. So if you wanted to play Carl Kolchak, who is working for a newspaper or a tabloid, actually, that investigates paranormal activity, you could do that. There's the one of my personal favorites because I wrote it, which is the Smithsonian Institute's Special Collections Division. So these are basically haunted and cursed objects that you have to go out and find and bring in that the creatures of the other world are also trying to get. So if you wanted to run a Friday the 13th, the series meets Warehouse 13, you could do that. So what Crypt World basically is a toolbox so that you can run the kinds of horror scenarios and the kind of organizations and the kind of PCs that you want to run.
Very nice. Now, do you bring back, I know you were saying that it was probably intellectual property. I remember in Chill, you know, we probably should have covered this earlier in the interview, actually. But in Chill, one of the big things was the art, or I always called it the art. But what was it called again? Like the dark art?
It was called the Evil Way, I think is what you're shooting.
The Evil Way, yeah, that was
that's
it.
What you were shooting for. That, like you said, again, that is something that is attached to the Chill property. However, that is something that we updated for Crypt World. In the original Chill, pretty much every creature had access to the Evil Way. And the Evil Way, for those who have not played Chill, are basically paranormal horror spells that the creatures could do. They could raise fog. They could lash out with psychic abilities. They could... I'm kind of blanking on some of the Evil Way abilities, but they were basically a shared paranormal magic ability. What we've done is that in Crypt World, rather than having this pool of available spells, every monster has its own specific powers and abilities that it alone has access to. Which gives each creature a degree of uniqueness, if you will. So, for example, like if you come across a Gorgon, which is mm-hmm. your typical Medusa, this would be the only creature whose ability is to be able to paralyze and turn people to stone, because that's its gimmick. So rather than having everything have access to a wide variety of gimmicks, every monster is unique in that respect, and they have their own unique powers. But there are some abilities that we call unsettling powers, and those are more of an environmental ability. So any creature that has a power score, which means that it has those unique abilities, it can also tap into the unsettling abilities or unsettling powers, which is like words forming on the walls in blood, or a slick surface kind of surfacing. So it's a way to kind of freak out players by introducing those environmental horror scenarios and those kind of setting and scene situations that they might encounter.
So maybe something, maybe, hey, Michael, here we go. You could do the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror.
Well, as soon as it goes out of print, I can.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, there is that one little caveat.
Yes, so I hope.
Make a new edition, if they make second edition Crypt World, then they can run first edition.
Well,
and I know you don't agree, but I always say we do games out of print and editions no longer support.
Well, since I am the founder of Dead Game Society, I think it's my call. Yeah. However,
well, I tell you what, keep making that call.
Well, here we go, because I'm going to have to say this. I don't want Crypt World to go out of print, so therefore I will never run it. How's that sound?
But I'm okay if you guys want to put a second edition out so that we can run first edition.
All right. I might be on the fence with that. I mean, I'll play it, of course.
Well, okay. Well, not to.
But I'll play Crypt World just as a non-DJ.
Exactly.
But let me help Michael out by saying this. Crypt World might be a current game that is currently in print. However, since it is also backwards compatible with the classic Chill, as well as any products that come out, wink, nudge, for Crypt World, will also be backwards compatible. It will also be able to scratch that itch to play a game that is currently out of print with materials that are still supporting it.
Exactly.
It's a great, I think it would be a, if you've ever wanted to play Pacesetter's original Chill and you're having some problems finding a copy of it, I think that Crypt World would definitely, as you said, I think it would definitely scratch that itch. I think it would be a great gateway. And then later on, maybe you come across an older copy of the original Chill, and you then you're already geared up to run it if you happen to want to buy that out of print.
Right. And as you know, I'm not saying anything bad about Crypt World. It's just that's what the DGS is all about, is running out of print games. So that's why I don't want your game.
And out of print.
Right. Well, I don't want your game to go out of print. So hopefully maybe 30 years from now, I'll be able to play it or run it. That's what we're hoping for. Now, speaking of Chill, now they have a third edition coming out too that I guess is on Kickstarter right now until the 31st.
I know just a little bit about that simply because of my interest in all things Chill and Pacesetter and all that stuff. A lot of people know that, you know, obviously Chill Pacesetter version then became Mayfair Smith second edition, for lack of a better phrase. There was a third edition that was attempted back in the early 2000s, I believe, by Otherworld Creations, and they actually put together a playtest edition that you can kind of find still floating out there if you're into such illegality. And it was an attempt to bring Chill classically to the 2000s. And that just kind of floundered. I think they tried to raise money for it, and this was prior to Kickstarter and Indiegogo, and it just kind of floundered and just withered on the vine. Well, now there's a company called Growling Door Games, and sadly, I don't know that much about them. I know that they've released other projects and other products, but they have secured the license to Chill, the Mayfair edition. From a gentleman in Canada who currently owns the actual license. And they just launched a Kickstarter on October the 1st, for a true third edition of Chill. They've rewritten the system somewhat. They've introduced, tokens, and some other mechanics that I'm kind of unclear on. But anyway, the Kickstarter for that is currently underway, and it will end, oddly enough, on Halloween. So making it a very Halloween-y kind of...
I was about to say Halloween.
Yeah, it looks like they're out in Ohio. That's your neck of the woods.
Yes, it is. I don't know them personally, but apparently I can see their house from here. So
nice.
Well, Sarah Palin can see Russia from her nearest doorstep.
So take that as you will.
So I don't want to speak for their project or whatever, but it's nice and very heartening for this old Chill player to see that. The game itself is still very much, there's a lot of interest in it. And I have no doubt that they'll be very successful raising the funds for that. And of course, with Crypt World, you know, we're keeping the flame alive, with the classic Pacesetter horror system. So it looks to me like, although the whole, Pacesetter, gaming system and the action table and, you know, Chill and Time Master, they all might have been released back in the 80s. But they're all still very much active today.
And with Crypt World, like we were saying, you'll be able to now grab a copy of Crypt World and enjoy the same fun that, you know, we all enjoyed back in the 80s playing Chill. And if you do happen to run across a box of Chill, I highly recommend, especially the Pacesetter version, highly recommend picking it up. I have a copy, and now I want to get a copy of Crypt World that I can just run kind of on my own outside of
it. Well, what would be nice is to have Tim come up to Nexus in June and run Crypt World. That'd be
maybe have a
nice special guest section, you know, kind of something to that effect. I can talk to Chris and Colin about that. That would be a lot of fun, because I would love to play Crypt World. It just sounds right up my alley.
I would love to be there. I would love to do that. So yeah, give me some information. I'll be happy to run the game and to kill off Michael in the first 10 minutes, and so he wonders why he even signed up in the first place.
Oh, I look forward to that.
Wonderful.
As and can I be the person at the table who kills Michael?
We'll talk after the show, and we can make some arrangements.
It's always been my dream.
You have lousy dreams.
It's on my bucket list. I tell you what, Tim, I think that we have been able to give the listeners in this show a good idea about both the original Pacesetter Chill as well as the new Crypt World and you know, how they can run it, how and some ideas that they can use for it. And, you know, hopefully you walk away or the listener walks away from the interview saying that they also, you know, they understand now an idea about the mechanics. They could have a conversation with somebody about either game and sound somewhat educated on it. I'm really glad you were willing to come on to our show and talk about that. You were very eloquent. And I hope you'll be on our show again.
I have never been described as eloquent ever, but I appreciate that. And
can I describe you as Halloween-y?
Yes, let's end with that. Mr. Snyder, who can best be described as Halloween. I've enjoyed being on the show. This is obviously a game system that I've been passionate about for years, and actually now being able to contribute to the line is fairly thrilling for me personally. There's a lot of really interesting stuff for Crypt World coming up in the near future, so stay tuned.
All right, well, I'm going to buy my copy.
Sounds great.
All right.
Okay, well, Michael, did you have anything aside from the fact that you're going to buy a copy that you wanted to add?
No, it's been great. I mean, it's always great to talk to you, Tim. Hopefully we'll see you up at Nexus. Let's try to get maybe a horror themed thing going. We'll have our own room and we'll run a lot of chill and Crypt World. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
It'll definitely happen. Just get me information when you have dates and times and places. I'll make it happen.
Oh, absolutely. It'll be great.
All right. Sounds like fun, Dad.
All right. Talk to you soon.
All right. So thanks, Tim. And for you, the listeners, I hope you enjoyed the episode as much as we enjoyed getting to talk to Tim. And we always enjoy talking to Tim. We see him at conventions a lot, and he's just a great guy. So until we meet again, let me just say, keep playing with good things. Bye-bye.